Isaiah 62, the Christmas Old Testament lesson. Interesting, there's no direct connection here to the Christmas story or the Christmas gospel, but some great food for homiletical application, especially as one places this into the greater context of Isaiah. Maybe we should, for the sake of time, get through translation and then make some applications later. But at least know where we are here, right? This is pretty much so the restoration set question. Isaiah 62, 10 to 12. I think that's correct, isn't it? Is that what they advertised? 62, 10 to 12. Where the assumption is that the people have already been captured, gone into exile, and now we're looking beyond that toward restoration. In a sense, this is the point of Isaiah 40. And there's a natural segue, I suppose, here to the Advent pericopes, if you've done anything with the voice crying in the wilderness and all the business in Exodus 40, where there the Advent preparation is to prepare the way for Yahweh, who is now perceived as the king returning to his city with his spoil and booty and captives in tow. This is a common Middle East image, okay? And this highway is the highway that the king uses to come home victorious. And in a sense, it's that same image that's being picked up here of the holy highway. You get this all over the place. This comes up already, by the way, in chapter 35 on the holy highway, which is one of the Advent readings, though not in this series. But you have those Advent hymns, prepare the royal highway, the King of Kings is near, or however that goes, which would be very appropriate for this kind of stuff. But now we've sort of made the move, if you will, to Christmas itself, all right? And it's like the king is here. We're not just sort of looking at him coming, but we're kind of on the road nevertheless, and you might even play with that sort of now, not yet tension. Granted, Christmas has come, but we're still always on the road yet. Okay, let's translate. Ivru, Ivru, Bashemayim, Panu, Derech Ha'am. Actually rhymes a little bit. Rather distinctive here. There, a lot of times Isaiah gets carried away with these double imperatives. Now, Avar you probably had, clear or crossover. Crossover, crossover in the Sha'arim, in the gates. Did I read there on Bashemayim? In the gates of the city. Now, it's never quite clear which gates we're talking about. I think this is the gates of the city to which the king is coming. So it's kind of like go through the gates and receive him. Kind of, you know, stand out in front of the church and welcome him in. All right. Panu derek ha'am, prepare. Panu really means to turn attention toward or clear out the derek of the Am. Now, isn't this interesting? In chapter 40, it was the way of Yahweh. Now it's the way of the people. And the focus has sort of rightly, I don't want to say necessarily shifted, but included not just the king, Yahweh, but also the people who are identified with him. So prepare the way of the people. Solu, solu, ha-misila. Again, double imperatives. Solu is, these are great forms to parse. These are geminate verbs. That means you got two letters that are the same at the end. The root is salal, samik, lamed, lamed. It's the kal imperative. No. Yeah, it's the kal imperative. And the verb salal is also the root of the noun misala, which you see there. Misala is the word for highway. So guess what salal means? It means to raise up a road. All right. By the way, highways are called highways because they're raised up. Okay. And in the ancient world, this was common. All right. You had to get them up off the ground a little bit, not just to make them level and smooth, but to build in a ditch, if you will. Now we kind of leave the road flat, but we dig a ditch alongside of it. But if you just raise the road, the ditch is sort of natural. And the whole point of this is that you got to go up onto the road. And it gives you at least a little advantage over whatever else might be out there, like wild beasts and thieves and stuff, who have to come up to get you if you're on the road. That's sort of the mentality of building highways. So make high the highway. Sakalu me evan. The verb sakal in the kal means to stone somebody, to throw stones at people. In the pl, which it is here, the pl imperative, it really means to de-stone something. Clear the stones away. All right? So de-stone from evan. Evan is the word for stone. So it's a little bit redundant. De-stone from stone. Clear the path. All right? Clear the stones, the big boulders out of the way so you don't trip over them. Harimu nes al ha'amim. Harimu, hifil imperative of the hollow root room. Be high. In the hifil, raise. Cause to be high. A nace, a standard, an ensign, a banner. This is really the symbol, if you will, of the presence of the king. Nace is a fairly loaded term, all right? It's like the flag in battle, right? And the idea is you got to keep the flag up. If the guy holding the flag gets shot, somebody else picks up the flag. Because once the flag goes down, you're finished. As the flag, so the king. As the king, so the people. And you almost have this identity. And I make that point because exegetically you can do a lot with this business of the symbol of the presence of the king, or that which signifies his presence. Lift high the cross certainly comes to mind. All right. Raise up the banner al upon, however we're going to translate al, we sort of stumbled, well not stumbled, but puzzled over that last week, upon the amim. Now amim is the plural of the am. This is everybody else. Raise up the banner upon the amim. Does this mean for them to see, or does this mean over them as though they are intended to be included in this celebration? One could probably press it toward the latter, and if you're sort of thinking the fact that this celebration of the coming of the victorious king is not just limited to the people, but is intended to include everybody else as well, perhaps it's an accent worth making. 11. Hine. We're going to talk about hine yet, first-year guys. Hine, which means looky here. Huh? Here he is. Behold. Behold Yahweh Hishmiah. Hishmiah, nice review of some hifils here. Has caused to hear. Now, this is often used not quite in that wooden, literal hifil sense, cause something to happen, but to make known. All right, Yahweh has made known or caused something to be heard. El Katse Haaretz. El Katse is the construct of Katse, end of the Aretz. Yahweh, behold, or look, Yahweh has made known to the end of the earth. That's really the end of the first section, I think. Raise them, because Yahweh now is proclaiming this, and again, notice, it's not just for the people, but for everybody to hear. Remember that the goal here is that all nations should see the ensign in Zion and come and at least ask what's going on here, if not actually listen to and hear Torah. That's Isaiah 2, which is early on in the book and stands in the background already. That all the nations might flow to Zion, and that's the swords and the plowshares business. But now, who's speaking? Say to Bath Zion. Now, to whom is this imperative given? I don't know. I guess Yahweh's speaking, and he's telling the heralds, who aren't really in the direct context here. In fact, it's a good question, to whom are any of these imperatives given? Yeah, Jeff? Well, it seems to. I guess I don't know. Let me think about that. Are you saying it goes better with 11b? I guess I'm picking up the plural imperative of 11b with the plural imperative of 10a and seeing those as matching a little bit. So maybe we got sort of a second round of imperatives here. Say, but again, it's kind of a question, you know, to whom is this imperative being given? I think it's the prophets, if you will, or the messengers. Say to Bath Zion, I'm going to read that as an appositive, to daughter Zion, Hine, another Hine, Yesh Ek Ba. Okay, first year guys, we just did participles, right? Here's the hollow participle, Ba, right, from root Bo. Now, how do you know whether this is a perfect or a participle? Answer? Parsing guide won't help you. The answer in form is you can't. It's the same, right? You could translate this, behold, your salvation has come, perfect, or behold, your yesha, your salvation, is coming. And here's one where you're really stuck, because in poetry the word order is hardly that precise. Now, your instincts would tell you it's probably a participle because it follows the noun. Your salvation is coming. The ambiguity between is coming and come almost stands at the crossroads between whether we're still in Advent or whether this is Christmas Day now. And the bottom line is, it really doesn't make any difference anyway, because Christ has come and he's still coming, and you're always sort of in this now and not yet tension, but it's almost strengthened by the fact that the same verb form could work either way. Now, in context, guys, I mean, you can't go into theological mischief just because you got an ambiguous form. I think, in fact, this is a participle, all right? Because the king is still coming. And the whole point of this pericope is to anticipate his coming. And maybe that's not a bad theme even on Christmas Day, you know? This is always sort of a standard homiletical application for Christmas Day. Now that Christmas has come, you know, after all that's gone into this, not just theologically in terms of Advent, but everything else everybody does for the month of December, that this is a holiday for which our whole nation has looked forward to now for months, and merchants state their whole year's income on it. Now that Christmas has finally come, so what? See, past tense, or is there more? And for most who stake everything on, now the big day is here, it's almost an anticlimax when it comes. And yet the text for Christmas Day is saying, now wait a minute. There's still something coming yet. All right, let's look beyond Christmas, at least for the significance of this, if not temporally for the fact that there's still more to come. Behold, now you got some more. He's coming, so he's getting nearer now. Hine, a third Hine. Isaiah likes to use things in threes. Go back to Isaiah 40. To cry out to people that A, her warfare is over, she received relief from the Lord, had double for all her sins. Three things. Hine. Behold, Yahweh makes known. Behold, your salvation is coming. 11c, behold, sikaro ito. A sakar is a payment, a wage, what you get at the end of the day. A fee, if you will. And here it's sort of hit the result of his labor. His payment is ito, with him, and his palatho, and his pala, which is from the verb pa'al, it means to make or do. Pala also means sort of the result of what you've done. So the fruits of his labor, if you will, the end result. Lifanau is before him. Now what is this? What is his reward, if you will? The result of his labor. Well, ordinarily, for a king coming in victorious homecoming procession, this was the spoil of war, which were the captives stripped down and marched in embarrassment, and all the booty of war. Okay. Now, the only thing in the context here that's sort of along with the king in this parade is the am. But this isn't the am that he has captured. It's the am that he has gone to Babylon to rescue, because they were his am to begin with. All right? That's the spoil of war. He has won the victory for his own people. And now it talks again of those people. You see, we kind of come full circle to focus on the people. 12, and karu lahem, this is Hebrew idiom, they will call to them, literally. Who's the they? It's impersonal. Anyone will call to them. Call to somebody means to give them a name, all right? They will call to them. We had this in that Jeremiah text a few weeks ago. This is the name by which one will call to him, the Lord our righteousness, Yahweh Tzidkenu. And they will call to him, so the people, you could translate this passively, and the people will be called, and Am HaKodesh, the Ge'ulei Yahweh. Am HaKodesh, literally, the people of the holiness. Noun probably used more adjectivally, the holy people, but Hebrew says it with nouns. The people of the holiness, the Ge'ulei, this is the passive participle of Ga'al, we had the active participle, goel, to redeem. Passive. The redeemed of Yahweh. And to you. Interesting. We finally kind of bring the text home to a second singular form. And to you, yikare, here it is passive, it will be called, nifal, derusha. Now, derash is the verb for seek out. It's passive. Feminine. The feminine here is probably not the Am, but the Bath Zion, daughter Zion. To you it will be called passive, sought out. Desirous, the kind of thing people go and see. Or, I think, theologically, this is reversing the idea of derash. Derash is commonly used, especially in liturgical texts, for seeking Yahweh, for going to the temple to seek God, to go into his presence. Now it's passive. Who's doing the seeking? The people aren't seeking Yahweh. They have been exiled from his presence. So what does God do? He seeks them. And now they're not the seekers, but they're the sought out. You will be called the one, the sought out city, an ear, a city not na'azvah. Nifal of Azav, to forsake, Nifal, forsaken, a city not forsaken. One last homiletical thought, I tried 1 year in preaching on this text, is it's interesting that the point of the text at the end here is the naming of whom? Who gets a new name here when the king comes? The people. Now if you want to apply this to sort of a birthday theme like Christmas, most people approach a birth with the question of, what are you going to name the baby? This text reminds us that when Christ comes, those who get a new name are his people. We get the name. He is born and we get a new name. Those who are sought out, a city not forsaken. Well, we're precious out of time. We got to go. Quick question? No. Yeah, I think he's still, but I think it's a participle. Well, yeah, you know, doggone it, the kingdom of God has come near. Now, what does that mean? Yes or no? Is it here or is it near?